There are approximately 12.35 million people employed in the restaurant and food service industry. Chances are good that most of those people, at one time or another, dreamed of owning a successful restaurant. Their restaurateur's dream leads us to ask, what is the most important factor in determining long-term viability of a restaurant? Is it food, service, or location?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,408th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paris who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, I often get queries from public relations folks who want me to host a restaurant-related food show for one of their clients. One such query suggested that I host an expert in restaurant franchises who was touting a new restaurant called the Ford Garage. Unable to see myself eating a meal in a Ford Garage or even a Chevy Garage, I asked, "Did you say the Ford Garage?" "Well, yes," I was told. "Just think about all the people who were raised with Ford automobiles. Why, every one of them will be a natural customer of a Ford Garage restaurant." "No, thank you," I said. But not too long after that, I found myself eating lunch at an Eric's Deli Cafe, which is a relatively small chain serving the San Francisco and Monterey Bay areas. In fact, I have been eating at Eric's Deli Cafe for years, without even thinking about it. So I thought about it and asked myself the following question. What is the most important factor in determining the long-term viability of a restaurant like Eric's Deli Cafe? Is it the food? Is it the service? Or is it the location? Well, who better to ask than the father and son team that own and operate Eric's Deli Cafe? Eric and Brian Johnson. Eric, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Brian, welcome there.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having us.
Good. Father, son, do you ever argue?
No.
Of course. We probably argue right now whether we argue.
He just ignores me, so no argument.
He doesn't listen to me, so no. I say that with a smile.
I don't know how you could run a business without with somebody else without arguing or discussing things. So you must have a way of quickly resolving those issues that divide you.
Well, issues divide us necessarily. I think it's just a different approach over the years. It's been honed over, 15 years. But, to use a saying my father likes to use, I'm sure I could write a book on the father-son dynamic when it comes to businesses and especially the food industry. But, it was just
a number of years.
And I've learned to compromise. Move on and defer to Brian and his team, and it seems to work.
Good. Well, every good restaurant story has a good beginning, I think. So I'd like to hear about the beginning of Eric's Deli Cafe from Brian, who wasn't there It started, but who, I'll bet, has heard the story. So, Brian, how did Eric's begin?
From what I was told, it was back in 1973. Eric, my father, was settled in Santa Cruz after spending some time up in San Francisco, I believe in the late 60s. Came down here, started as a real estate agent. I think worked through that and found his passion maybe was elsewhere. Always wanted to be his own boss and own his own business. And I think was on the lookout for a place and came across a spot in Scotts Valley. Opened that on September 17th, 1973. And then from there, I was born, 8 years later, or 7 years in 81. So child number two, as I like to joke. But I think the story itself should come from the man himself, Eric.
You're going to defer.
I am going to defer a little bit because I think his telling and the passion behind the soups and things like that, I don't do it justice.
Okay. Well, it's a great story about him borrowing the money from his dad. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want me to jump in?
Sure.
I like that, Brian, second child. I guess it has been a first child. What happened, like Brian was saying, came down from San Francisco, was in the real estate business, wasn't really making any money, didn't enjoy it.
Just before you proceed, San Francisco in the 60s?
Michael, I lived three doors up from the corner of Haight-Ashbury. 69, 70, 71, 72. It was rock and roll time, yeah. So it was a lot going on. So that was the... And when I came to Santa Cruz, after I got out of the real estate business, I was able to kind of grow my hair back, you know, and the beard and the big afro and all that stuff, so Birkenstocks. But anyway, getting back to how we started, Brian said I was trying to get and do my own thing, and my dad said, you know, you're working all the time. Why don't you get into your own business? I said, okay. So I came across this little place up in Scotts Valley, in Kings Village Shopping Center. And walked in, and this lady said, I said, I've heard your business is for sale. Somebody had referred me up to them. She said, yes, I want to get out of here. I don't want to do this anymore. And I said, well, I think I'll buy it. I've been looking around for like a bookstore, natural food store, just to get into my own business. And this turned out to be really inexpensive. So, you know, I mentioned it to her, and she said, okay. I said, how much do you want for it? And she said, well, just my inventory. And if you'll take over an existing note that I have with a friend of mine so I could buy some equipment, $3,300, just sign your name. So the only cash I had to come up with was her inventory. So that was Thursday, and Sunday we did an inventory. And then on Monday, I drove back up there, you know, my little Clementine orange VW with my coat and tie, and I'm still in a real estate business. I walked in around 11:30, and I said, hi, Barbara, how's it going? And she says, well, you're not good. I just don't want to do this anymore. And I said, well, you know, we're going to do a 45-day escrow. I need to learn the business and transition into the food business from the real estate business. And she said, no, I'm out of here. I just don't want to do this anymore. So literally, she literally walked out the door, and I turned around. There was one employee working, and I said, what's your name? And she said, Susie. And I said, well, Susie, I think I own this business, so don't you get kind of busy during lunch, you know, because they make sandwiches and stuff like that? And she said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, give me one of those little white aprons and let's rock and roll and go for it. So she taught me how to make sandwiches, and turned out that my folks were very good at, my dad would make soups for the Deli Cafe, and my mom would make carrot cakes and stuff. And so away I went in the business. And so if you look at my license plates, do you know what the SV429? No. I put those on there a long time ago. No, nobody really
knows in Eric's.
It's my license plates say SV429.
Scotts Valley 429. Mm-hmm. That's how much money you borrowed.
That's how much cash I had to come up with. That was their inventory.
Oh, okay.
I probably borrowed it from my dad. So away I went, that's literally how we started. But you know, once again, I was able to start small and not make any fatal mistakes. I could make mistakes and learn from them and then interact with my customers who helped grow the business. And so that was the advantage of starting small. It's only 600 square feet. It was all right. 10 feet wide.
Do you remember your first sale?
You know, it probably was a donut in the morning. We sold donuts. We opened at 8 o'clock. Okay. O'Farrell's Donuts. That was probably the first sale, first lunch. I mean, the first sandwich, who knows? Maybe it was a turkey sandwich or roast beef sandwich. Oh, a cheese sandwich. That's right. A friend of mine came in, and I cut him a big chunk of cheese off the slicer about an inch thick. He could barely eat it. I didn't know what I was doing, so he took it home with him. Anyway,
not a good deal.
A long time ago.
Well, good. And, yeah, long time ago. And boy, I was just in my junior year at UCSC at that time. So San Francisco must have had an impact on how you made sandwiches.
You know, that's...
I mean, it was the times.
That's interesting, because I never thought about that before. I don't think it had an impact necessarily on me going to the business. To answer your question, to get back to making sandwiches or coming up with the ingredients for sandwiches... But what we did, one of the things, I just reflecting on that, was that sprouts.
Sprouts,
you know,
exactly.
I decided that we would put sprouts in the sandwiches because before they were putting lettuce, iceberg lettuce. They said, you know, there's not a lot of nutritional value in iceberg lettuce, so let's go to Sprouts. They have good nutritional value as far as vitamin A and stuff, so that made sense. And then we were giving like a bag of chips with every sandwich. I said, let's give a pickle and an orange, a little healthier. And so you're right, it did probably have an influence on me.
It was almost health.
Yeah.
I mean, it was much different than any other quick service restaurant. You had Sprouts. You still have Sprouts.
Yeah, we.
I watched a guy just yesterday when I was at lunch at Eric's. And I said, he was across the way there, and he had a big, beautiful sandwich, and it was just packed with Sprouts. And he took that sandwich in two hands and bit into it, and you could just see happiness. But it's no longer really health food. It's more like it's wholesome food.
Wholesome food. I didn't really start out to necessarily be a health nut as far as whatever, organic, but it turned out to be that way because I was eating in the restaurant myself. I wanted to eat healthy, and so that was, you know, gravitated towards more healthy and nutritional type foods. And, you know, I'm working with my customers every day, and I didn't want to do anything that was not going to be healthy for them, so to speak.
So. Right. And so that lasted. One other thing, deli cafe. Now, did you invent that term? Aha. Uh-huh. Why did you invent? What does it mean?
You know, there's hours of stories behind each one of these questions, Michael.
Of course there are.
Let me give you the brief. Okay, so we started out as Eric's Deli. And so we went to, in 1979, we started to grow. We went over to Los Gatos. And I said, you know what? Eric's Deli, they're probably thinking sliced meats and cheeses. And we eliminated that portion of the business, went strictly to sandwiches. So I said, you know, people are going to think it's a place you can come in for meats and cheeses, sliced meats and cheeses or whatever. And so I decided to change the name to Eric's Deli Cafe, Cafe Atmosphere, serving deli types of food.
And so, you know, there's only one other deli cafe in the United States, as far as I could see. I looked, did a search for deli cafe, could only find one other one. I think it's someplace in the South. But you're the only one around here on the West Coast.
I tried to trademark it, but they wouldn't let me trademark just the word Deli Cafe. They thought the trademark office thought it was too generic of a term. I could use Eric's Deli Cafe and trademark that, but not just the word Deli Cafe.
Well, you didn't need to because there aren't any.
Well, good point. We're awful proud of that, you know, that word, cafe atmosphere, serving deli types of food is the whole meaning.
Which makes you unique.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. That would be our goal, too, to always be unique, a little different.
Well, it is, and it works.
Got so many stories, Michael. When I talk to people, like, I get really passionate about, you know, I can talk about the significance of that pickle or the significance of the difference between alfalfa sprouts and clover sprouts. But see, that pickle, briefly, years ago, I went over to the pickle plant over in Stockton, and I talked to the guy, and I said, the process, all refrigerated, the rabbi blesses them and all that stuff. I said, hey, what happens during this winter when you can't grow cucumbers? Oh, we get them from Mexico. No, I fly down there, supervise the picking of the pickles, and they put them in a refrigerated truck, come back to my plant in Stockton. The ideal pickle is 6 inches for flavor and stuff. It's not just a pickle. See the stories behind that?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host, with Eric and Brian Johnson. They are the proprietors and owners of Eric's Deli Cafe, serving the San Francisco and Monterey Bay areas with fresh, wholesome food. And when we come back, we're going to learn how they grew that business into a franchise opportunity that everybody can participate in one way or another. You can eat there. You can even own it if you want. This is The Food Chain. We will be right back after these short messages. Do stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
What is the factor that's most important in determining the long-term viability of a restaurant? Eric and Brian Johnson, in serving the San Francisco and Monterey Bay areas. How long have you been in business, Eric?
Over 52 years.
over 52 years. Mm-hmm. So you must have an answer. What is the most important thing? And I'll ask Brian, too, see if we can get a consensus here. Is it the food? Is it the service? Is it the location?
Now, that's a big question.
It's a mean question.
Well, I've thought about that a lot over the years. And Judy, my wife, and Brian's mom, you know, why are we here?
53
years. Well, yeah, I look back at all the trials and errors and everything else. And then I look at the delis. I get some really positive customer feedback from, I was in your San Ramon Deli Cafe, or I was in your San Jose Deli Cafe, and the people were so nice and everything. So it gets back to the bottom line. When you look at service and you look at the employees and you look at the hiring process or the training process, total customer awareness into the customer 100% of the time, all the time. And I think that shows in our employees and how they interact with our customers. We get everybody's first name so we can find you when you're out there in the deli cafe eating, but it gets a bond between the customer and the employees. So I think one of the most important things is just being totally customer oriented. It's not about, it's sort of where you draw the line. In other words, geez, I really don't want to do this, but it's best for the customer, so I'm going to do this. I don't want to work an extra 2 hours, but if people are hungry, they want to come in, I'm going to serve them. Being so into that customer, and sometimes, you know, it's not easy because you sacrifice a lot of your own, your own self, so to speak. So, but, you know, then you, location obviously is important, but, you know, some of our locations starting out, Scotts Valley, Aptos, Los Gas, they're in the back of the shopping center. But I figure we can create our own environment back there, quieter and that kind of thing. And so, and then, you know, you look at the quality of the food. And I got to throw in my, I did this probably 20, 25 years ago. We started to grow more from going to Scotts Valley, Capitola to Aptos. Why are we successful? What are our uncompromising values that we will not compromise at all? And I came up, I'd ask you, Michael, you said, I went to the deli cafe. I really like the atmosphere. I like the food. So I came up with four words of why we're successful.
There we are.
Okay. Consistency. Got to be consistent wherever you go.
For all the years I've been eating at your place, it's always consistent.
Bingo. Quality. Don't cut your quality. Raise your price, my dad would say. If you're not making money, don't cut your quality. Raise your price. Okay? C, Q, and then S, service. That customer and employee interaction. It's so important to us.
Okay.
And what's the I, Michael?
Idea. I do.
The most important one, in a lot of ways, the one that keeps it all together, the reason I'm still sitting here and Brian's still working here, what could that possibly be? In one letter, I.
Truth. I'm supposed to be the guy asking the question. Do you notice how he turned this off?
Truth in menu. If in doubt, throw out. Don't experiment with your customers. I've thrown out thousands of dollars worth of food because I wasn't quite sure it was kept at the right temperature. On and on and on. What would that I possibly? Not income.
Oh,
not income. There's no I or P. P isn't, there's no P for profit in there. The I is not income.
Okay. It would have to be something relating to truthfulness or integrity.
You got it.
Integrity.
Bingo. Integrity. That's what puts it all together.
Okay. So which is the most important of all of those?
Well, integrity keeps you consistent, keeps the quality up, and the service where it should be.
Okay.
It can all filter back into those, I think.
That was a good answer. Brian, yes. Which do you think is the most important?
It's hard to disagree with that. I like how that integrity, you know, ties it together. But I think it all comes together. It's all, I don't think you can have one without the other. You know, going back to your question for us, food and service, I think they're hand in hand. You know, it starts with the food, and, you know, here at Eric's, you know, my team, we're proud of the food we serve, and I think that trickles into the service. We're eating the food on a regular basis, and I think if you have those two components, it you know, that's where it's at. I certainly understand location, location, location. But as Eric said, with some of our our locations, you know, in back of centers and are still doing well. But I think you nail on that food and that service. And that's been, you know, set by Eric. And when we were founded, you know, trickles down through a lot of our franchisees today that have been with Eric's for decades. New people coming aboard, so on and so forth. And I think that it's kind of the ticket. It's easier said than done. I joke about that a lot. The food service, you think you can just, you know, do it, but it's, you know, a lot of work goes into it and a lot of time. And
do you think a franchise that calls itself the Ford Garage could possibly be made to work?
If you had the food and the service, yes.
You actually think
I'm a firm believer in that. I think, yeah. I think if you create that environment, I think you could. Now you got me thinking of a Ford Garage. Maybe we'll talk on the side. I might have a new franchise going. No, I truly believe that. I think it's the food and the service, and it's so easy to, you know, get lost in the technology, get lost in the, you know, what can we do to cut costs? What can we do, you know, on that standpoint without looking at those, right, you know, those two
foundational pieces. I think what keeps me coming back is the same thing that keeps that gentleman I watched eat a sandwich yesterday coming back, and it's the food. I think the food works.
Thank you.
Most important to me. And watching that gentleman eat that sandwich yesterday, that two-fisted sandwich, and it was like, yes, he'll be back for sure.
You know, looking back to the integrity and that, I've often thought about.
That's part of the food, right? You know, if you don't have
Yes, but I just wanted to say that, you know, what I try to get across sometimes to the franchisees, the employees, we're not necessarily in the food business. We're in the refrigeration business. Oh. If not properly refrigerated, I could kill you, and I don't particularly want to do that. So it turns into how important and the safety. See what I mean? That's below the surface.
But that's the food.
It's to me, exactly, that's the food. Exactly. Yeah. But we can't forget about, you know, just focusing on just that sandwich without thinking about what built that sandwich and make it safe. So important to our customers. And I eat there. And so if I'm not willing to eat there, I don't feel it's safe, I'm not serving it.
You had a store in Scotts Valley, California. It was 600 square feet.
Yeah.
And you started growing up and growing out. So how did you start growing?
Well, you know, we first of all reached out to the immediate merchants and stuff in the shopping center and got to know them, and they would refer customers to us. And, you know, we just kept pounding away at that CQSI, consistency, quality, service, integrity, just keep pounding away. And they just, you knew you could come there and not only get a great sandwich, but a safe sandwich or a nice bowl of soup. You know, my parents would, you know, you'd come in and.
I use the word wholesome. And I think that fits too.
Wholesome? Yeah, but wholesome's a pretty generic.
It's to me, that's safe.
Well, yeah, but I take it down when that's a generic wholesome. You know, it's like saying, I'll see you later. When's later? You know, it's wholesome and healthy. Yeah, organic. These are all general terms that sell products, so to speak. But, you know, you get to the situation where you'd come in and say, you know, I have a bowl of clam, or what are you going to have? And I'll say, try the clam chowder. I don't really particularly like clam chowder. I said, you know, my dad made that yesterday. Really? Oh, yeah, it's so good. And so we started building the business, like the carrot cake. I'm still a big seller of our carrot cake because that was my mom's recipe, and there's a whole story behind that. So you'd come in. I do that right now. I walk out the door, and people are walking in. I say, try the carrot cake. And I go, what? I said, yeah, my mom's recipe. They don't even know who I am in a way, but they get to know me. But my whole point is we were able to sell in a positive way that, I mean, this is real homemade because my parents were making the food. So that helped growing us and established a, my dad would say clams with real clam chowder. I mean, clam chowder with real clams or the carrot cake, you know, Judy and I, we used to crack up the nuts, you know, the walnuts and give them to my mom. All that kind of stuff sent a tone, sent a way that we do business, you know, wholesome, if you want to call it that way, healthy, homemade, authentic, real, on and on and on. And that's how we started growing. People started appreciating that.
How did you start expanding your square footage? You moved to new locations around town. First you opened up your own stores, right? Family stores?
Yeah, what we did was we were able to take over the appliance store next to us. We went from 600 square feet, added 1,200. So now we're at 1,860 square feet.
Now you have room for the cafe.
Tables and chairs. We only had a couple of tables inside before and a couple outside, so now we could expand. And that's another thing. I stood in the middle of this building going, we're going from 600 square feet to 1,200 square feet. Is anybody going to come in? What's going to happen? And so two things happened. One, people started filling the restaurant because now they had a nice place to sit. And my dad came along and said, you know, we got this big blank wall here. Why don't we reproduce the barn? And so we came up with a barnwood theme, the hayloft, and the branding irons. But it's more than just the decor. I wanted a place that people can come and relax and enjoy their food. Wow, my grandma used to have that, or my granddad used to have a farm. And so you just bring everybody down so they can enjoy their food. So it was not only just the look of the decor, it was the feel that we wanted to give our customers. So that, with the homemade aspect and the quality, it just, you know, and you'd keep doing that over and over, and people were going to come back.
And then you start marketing. And one of the things you marketed was sandwiches with character. What does that mean? Brian.
Well, the way I've been told, and I agree with this, is, you know, our sandwich with characters, part of it is, you know, I could go anywhere and get a turkey sandwich with avocado, and maybe not the sprouts, but I could, you know, throw some lettuce on there.
Not the pickle either.
Yeah, not the pickle, but maybe the mayo, you know, the tomatoes and the onions certainly, but I can only get a Pilgrim's Progress at Eric's Deli. And I think that sandwich with character, the, you know, Eric's Secret Goo, you know, that component, certainly the clover sprouts, and adds that character. And, you know, we've continued that over the years, you know, with the sandwich names, you know, that we come up with, the team we have now, like our recent sandwich, the Gaucho Grinder, was behind the meat, Argentina type feel. We had a California Crunch, a Dutch Crunch that with that avocado and that type. So we're always thinking of that. We're always reminded of that by Eric. But I think that's really it. That's what makes us, you know, our sandwiches, our sandwiches. You're not going to get a Pilgrim's Progress, you know, elsewhere. You're not going to, you know, and thoughts go into these sandwiches. These are sandwiches that are created by team members, by customers that we've had contests for, you know, among our team, among our franchisees, who are constantly thinking of ideas and that type of thing. So there's character between it. This isn't, right, you know, we're sitting down looking at numbers necessarily. It's based on, you know, the feel and look and the environment we've created at Eric's.
That's what I was going to say. The environment that you talked about when your father came in and said, ew, a white wall. Let's do something. Let's get character to this place. So kind of when you walk into an Eric's, you see all of these interesting wall decorations that take you back to a barn or to a country feel. And so you do have that character just when you walk right in the door.
Well, the sandwich, going back, you know, it all adds up. There's all something driving at it, whether it's character or integrity or whatever it might be. But in the old days, back in the 70s, you know, people would come in, you'd come in and say, you know, I want a turkey sandwich with, you know, jack cheese, and we put, you know, our sprouts on it and tomatoes, onions. And so we got to thinking, well, you know, that takes a long time to build that sandwich. Why don't we start giving him some names? And then so,
instead of ham sandwich?
Yeah. Somebody would come in the next day, and they'd say, I don't know what to get. You should try this Michael's sandwich. What is it, turkey and jack cheese? Really good. And we call it the Pilgrim's Progress. And so we started naming them. So what happens with that is we started naming, you know, Pilgrim's Progress, Del Monte Special, REO Speedwagon, Marrakesh Express. It was usually something to do with the ingredient with the sandwich name. So it kept us in a sort of an area that we didn't get too carried away with the names. And so we said, it has to be some relationship with one of the ingredients and the names. So then what happens is it's a lot faster to build when you've got a name to it, Pilgrim's Progress. Sandwich maker knows exactly what that is, gives us you uniqueness. And so in about late 70s, we had all these names, and advertising company came in and said, you know, you've got sandwiches with character. Because we're naming them after a lot of characters, Mountain Charlie, Cross-Eyed Charlie. We're just having a lot of fun. And they said, yeah, you've got some character. But it gives you that uniqueness.
Have a story.
And it gives you internally, it gives you a faster way to make that sandwich. Because a Pilgrim's Progress, you don't have to say turkey and jack cheese, all the names, write them all down. Pilgrim's Progress, and away you go. Operationally, it works really well. And the secret goo, too.
And the secret goo. Okay, what's in the secret goo?
I couldn't tell you, Michael. It won't be a secret. So here's the secret goo.
Of course not.
No, we were putting mustard mayonnaise in all the sandwiches. You want mustard with your turkey sandwich? I don't know. You want mayonnaise with your pastrami? Let's just put them together. Literally, Francie was her name, said, let's just put them together. I'll put a secret ingredient in there so nobody will be able to tell what they are. So then a long time ago, Bethany Bible College was trying to break the code of the secret goo. So,
oh, you're going to have to hold the story because we have to go to a break. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned for the secret story of the secret goo at Eric's Deli Cafe. Not going to hear it any other place but right here on the Food Chain. Michael Olson with Eric and Brian Johnson. They, the owners and father-son owners of Eric's Deli Cafe, serving the 7.6 million people of the San Francisco Bay region. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are talking with the Johnsons, Eric and Brian, father-son owners and operators of Eric's Deli Cafe. I think it's the only one. No, I looked and I did a global search for Deli Cafe. And there's only one, Eric's Deli Cafe, and there's only two deli cafes in the United States that I could find. So you really are something unique. Totally. If you're one of two in the United States, and the other one might be too small to even be one, not sure. But you've built yours up into 28, going to be 29 locations throughout the South San Francisco, Monterey Bay areas. Lots of restaurants come and go. I haven't been in media for a long time. I've seen them come and go. And yours has not come and gone. It's here. And why?
Why? Good question.
Why?
You want me to finish the secret goo first?
It's the secret goo.
That was a good lead-in. All right. I knew you'd get back to that. Anyway, you want...
Sure. Basically, the secret goo.
So, you know, we were sitting...
So there's some elements that make your Eric's Deli Cafe a character-filled place to eat. There's the decorations of the stores themselves, the locations themselves. You walk in and you look around, and it's a comfortable place to sit. Whether you're by yourself or you're having a business lunch or whatever, it's comfortable. The food has certainly some really interesting elements, including the names of the sandwiches and whatnot. The fact that you use sprouts still after all these years, which I have come to appreciate immensely, as well as the pickle, which I have also come to appreciate, given its nutritional value to our digestive system. But the secret goo, what is the secret goo that holds Eric's Deli Cafes together?
Well, it's turned out, it's become kind of, you know, iconic in a way as far as our sandwiches, but you get back to the good old days when people would come in and they'd say, you know, how a turkey sandwich, you want mustard mayonnaise with that? And, oh, I don't know if mustard goes with a turkey sandwich, and somebody want a pastrami sandwich. I don't know if mayonnaise. And so this lady, Francie, worked for us managing the deli, and she said, you know, Eric, you ask everybody that, and nobody can make up their mind. Let's just put them together, and we'll put a secret ingredient in there. And I said, okay, well, let's just call it Eric's Secret Goo for now. And, of course, that's stayed with us for all these years. And then what happened was we had Bethany Bible College at the time. They're not there anymore. They had a contest to see if they could break the secret to the secret goo. And so my dad came along and said, I'm going to make it even more complicated. So he added a whole bunch of different ingredients. Didn't change the flavor profile hardly at all. And so that ended up being our secret goo. But it all started with just to kind of make it quicker for the customer. And but also, there's only one place you get Eric's secret goo, and that's at Eric's Deli Cafe. Yeah, so yeah. Once again, creates that uniqueness for us.
That must be
so, someone's calling on the goo. He just let the secret out. We got a secret goo police. So
there you go. And then somebody's gonna call the police.
We got Eric a monitor on him.
So. Okay.
So anyway, that's the story behind that.
And good, because now when people see an Eric's Deli Cafe, they're in San Francisco Bay Area, and they are asked, "Would we like the secret goo?" Yeah, I'll try that secret goo.
Yeah, they can't do it at home. They got to come into our place.
So it has that provenance. It's a story that makes the character, I think, and you have a lot of character in your franchise. So let's talk about franchise. You have how many house-owned stores?
Okay, I'll answer that. We have out of the soon-to-be 29, we have one that's company-owned. Two. We have, you'd say, up there in
Folsom. Yeah, we're partnering with Folsom.
With Folsom. And then Scotts Valley one, we own outright.
Okay.
But I still got to pay Brian franchise fees, though, because. That was by design. In other words, and I think Brian can jump in after. If I can just give you a little history as far as. We started franchising around 85, 86, because I knew we wanted to grow. I knew we were in the type of business, how important it was for the owner-operator to be there. And that we proved that with me being there and Judy being there, working it all the time, getting to know our customers. And so we made a decision that our growth would be predicated on franchising and not necessarily company-owned stores. And so you bring on somebody that is owner-operator. They're there. That's their living, their net profit, and to support, for their expenses, whatever. And so that's worked out really well.
So all of your stores are locally owned stores?
Yeah, by individual, yes, basically.
For the most part.
Because people in the community, it's their stores, likely to be there, more likely to meet them as people met you through the years. Mm-hmm. In the store. So I have three laws of the food chain. And the second law of the food chain is the farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over within your food. So if you can be close enough to your food to see the farmer and see the farmer's face and look into the farmer's eyes, you're going to be pretty assured that you're going to get some decent food. And the same is true in a restaurant. If the restaurant owner is there, or his or her representative, you're close to the source of your food.
And so I call that kind of sphere of influence. In other words, how far do you get from your influence, whether it's us as a franchisor or them as a franchisee. And then you look at that whole, we created a central distribution system. Cooking it all ourselves, buying it all ourselves, and the distributing. Now we have Sysco that does all of our distribution, but those three commissaries that do our, except for the bread, they ship to Sysco, and then they go from there. So we have complete control in a positive way over that quality and that whole distribution system.
You're like, in a sense, similar to In-N-Out. Because In-N-Out Burger has central processing facilities, and they only expand as far as that they can reach with their central processing facilities. So, and that way they never have to sell frozen meats. All the meats are fresh and whatnot. So you're you have that same food quality mentality that keeps things close so that you can control them.
But you see how It started out to maintain control over our quality, our consistency, but it turned out to be beneficial from a financial standpoint. We can negotiate with one Sysco, all the delis, bring all that purchasing power in there, and it works out from a financial standpoint. See, that gets back to the CQSI. If you do CQSI, you're going to make a lot of money.
There you go.
You don't have to start out doing that. You don't focus in. See, that's the other thing is, you know, we've never chased the dollar. We've chased the CQSI, and the dollars have resulted from that. And I think that's very dangerous when you start chasing that dollar. But I'm getting off subject a little bit as far as the...
Kind of Buddhist.
Try to what?
It's kind of Buddhist.
Kind of, okay, well, good. I did learn something from it. Right. My trip.
All right, Brian, you're now the franchise guy, right? You're bringing the world of franchise in a much bigger way to Eric's Deli Cafe. How do you do that?
Oh, well, I think, you know, first you don't grow just to grow. I think that's something admirable, you know, about Eric's. I think what we've created, yes, a lot of people ask 52 years, you know, 28, you know, why not more? And that hasn't been the focus. And I think, you know, as we, you know, grow as a brand or kind of the next generation, what I'm very proud of in our growth is, you know, we look elsewhere is our existing team members, our existing franchisees, and really have seen our growth that way. And we're trying to focus on is now is with team members that have been working at Eric's for a number of years, if we could partner with them to get them their own store and kind of continue that legacy that I would say started in the 80s with, you know, Timmy at Watsonville, a franchisee still with us, Rick over in Redwood City, that type of thing where they've been with us and that generation is continuing, you know, to this day. SoCal Drive is Greg Newman, you know, born and raised in Santa Cruz from Harbor High School, used to work for us, now owns Deli Cafe. So that's really where I'm looking, you know, for our growth. You know, there's certainly the other part, you know, the external partners.
You're looking for team members. You're not looking for franchisees.
Yeah, a combo of both. You know, we're trying to find that, I think, middle ground is, you know, the health of a company that, you know, as things change, we do need to, you know, continue to look at new sites. But there's a passion within me, and I think our team is within the Eric's ecosystem. And yes, those team members that become partners that maybe just need that help, and that's what we've done up in Folsom. That's what we're looking to do in Elk Grove. And in San Francisco's a gentleman's name, Manny. It's his third store, but same thing. San Jose downtown was his first, and he's kind of grown from there, you know, working.
So he's an inner city guy.
Yeah, he's trying it. Yeah, he's, you know, great. Been, you know, working with him for 15 plus years and that type. So I'm really proud of that, kind of our growth. You know, we haven't, you know, just done it. And that's nothing against, you know, brands that choose to grow that way, but it's, you know, the way I envision our growth is to hopefully maintain that culture and the, you know, what we have and that CQSI and not chasing the, you know, the dollar. But it's a lot of work. It takes some time, but there's a passion there. And yeah, you know, I think it'd be great for our team members and continue that legacy because I think that's the Eric's from the franchisee. I really see that as a legacy is people that used to work at Eric's now own their own. And if we can, you know, continue that.
And let me jump in for a minute. Do you see what you're saying there? We're proud of setting up our people that have worked for us into their own business. That's part of our legacy. That's how we started. We took the original company-owned stores and we started franchising them to people that basically work for us. So we're proud of that, establishing businesses for people.
You have the CQSI. You have the system. So it's actually a great opportunity for somebody who wants to follow your system to just plug and play almost, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel, as it were. It's you're ready to go.
It is. And I would add to that in a positive too, like, you know, for our franchisees, it's a partnership and we bounce ideas off too. So there are systems in place, which is, you know, just to set you up. But going back to that California Crunch, I was a franchisee and we're very proud of that. I think that system of, you know, but yeah, the systems are in place and, you know, I think you have the right attitude, the passion, you know, we're here for you, so we're very proud of that.
Some franchise restaurants go for the venture capital funds. You know, they get an idea going like the Ford Garage, and we're going to have Ford Garages in every city in America, and they get a lot of money and start popping them up. But for some reason, they don't seem to last all that long. And I don't know how you can maintain control when there's a lot of them in one in every city, and how do you maintain control of that?
You know, I think that's, you know, no knock of the brands that, you know, haven't made it, but I think I would say from an outsider, that's kind of that chasing that dollar, and, you know, it's to chase the dollar, you know, open more stores, yay, you know, I can point to that, but are they successful? Are they going to be there in 5 to 10 years? Are they going to be there in, you know, and proud to say our stores have opened, you know, have stayed around, so I think that's the real challenge, I think, the, you know, but also what I value about Eric's and what we've created is it's, you know, not just open to open and
So is it affordable? Can I go out and buy an Eric Stiller?
If you're ready to work, ready. If you got the attitude and willing to put in that time, yes, it's certainly, we've met that.
So do people have to fill out an application? You must want to get to know people.
Yes. So a couple processes with that. If, new individuals coming in, there's a meet and greet and go through existing team members, that type of thing. We'll work with them over the years. And a lot of that is more just the financial and what we can do to provide them. But it's very much, I believe, and I think this is a testament to Eric, everyone else that, been with Eric since 73 that I'm kind of the shoulders on, is everything's in place. So if you have that passion and that desire for food, being part of your community, to hard work, I think the sky's the limit. You can be very successful. And, that's what's been established before me.
And it's the systems and procedures that we've established over the years, the trials and tribulations that we've been through. And so you buy into that, why wouldn't you franchise? You don't have to go through all that. And we have all these training programs and systems and procedures, and we're still here banging away, making sure it's
what. And then you can benefit from the name recognition built up by all of the other Eric's Deli cafes as well. Then you benefit from all of the work that all of the other Eric's Deli cafes have done in building the brand. So there's tremendous value in that. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's an Eric's Deli Cafe. I know what they do. So you have something there that's extremely valuable. The most important thing that keeps you going, what is it?
I guess 3-4 years ago, I would have said, my family. I think the desire to keep the legacy going. I'm a father of a 2-year-old, so I'm going to say Ianthe, my daughter, and of course Naomi, my wife, and that family that I've been able to have and support through Eric's. But I think that's, I think it's also just keeping honoring the legacy and the culture of Eric's Deli, and what that's mean is the next generation, I guess.
Good for you.
Kind of steps into place, but yeah.
And you got a third generation coming along too.
Yes, we do. Yeah. She is, we'll get into delis yet, but she's,
all right.
She's there.
Well, there it is. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the story, the provenance of Eric's Deli Cafe. You see an Eric's Deli, stop by, ask for a sandwich of your choice, and try the secret goo. It'll grow on you. From that, we're going to thank Eric and Brian Johnson, Eric's Deli Cafe, for joining us today. I've been eating there forever. How's that for a testament?
Thank you
both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.